Joining us now, as she does every couple of weeks, but now we're going to do it on Wednesdays, is our good friend Pam Colleen down in London. How are you, Pam?
I'm great, Tom. How are you today?
I am excellent. Now, I wanted to get your opinion on two things about obesity, because I thought this was fascinating. The New York Times had this article yesterday on the obesity paradox, which I hope people don't take fat as okay. I mean, fat is not bad, but obesity is not okay. And the second thing is, one of your favorite authors and a guy I think is a terrific journalist, Gary Taubes, is setting up a think tank to tackle America, but really it would extend to Western civilization, our obesity problem. So which one do you want to start with first?
Well, they do tie together, essentially. One of the issues, of course, around why we're so fat today, why we have so much obesity, is because of the low-fat lie. And we see so many, quote-unquote, experts holding on to this myth. So thankfully, we have Gary Taubes blending in with a medical doctor, Dr. Peter Attia. And they have a hedge fund, a billionaire hedge fund manager who's helping start this, finance this foundation to basically solve this problem surrounding obesity. And I know what they're going to find, and Gary knows what they're going to find, and Dr. Attia already knows that it's the low-fat lie that is basically burdening our healthcare system. So we can be very, very excited about this this new project that's starting up, and I think it's really going to solve a lot of the problems that we see today and help better manage our healthcare system.
Do you think we're going to be more accepting of this group who are, you know, Gary Taubes, although he's a journalist, is very well connected into the world of, I guess, nutrition and dietitians, but also, I mean, these are a lot of medical experts who have studied metabolism in the body and exactly how we take in calories and what the body does with it. And do you think the label, I don't mean to mean breakthrough, but still, they're hitting a wall when it comes to getting this information out to the public?
Right, and they're hitting a wall because of a lot of economic and financial ties that are putting out this information around, the quote-unquote alleged, benefits of edible oils, for example. So we have a huge lobby group out there that's trying to prevent this information from getting out. And I'm not talking about a conspiracy here. I'm just talking about greed and incompetence. These are people who, for many, many years, have been demonizing animal fats with the intention of selling their own products, which are newfangled products to the human diet, and clearly have not been helping us with our health. In fact, they've been burdening our health. So what we see with this wall is that finally we have somebody with some money behind an initiative to prove the science behind the benefits of animal fat. And I know that this initiative, Tom, is also going to embrace and look at any potential other theories that are out there, but I know that these other theories are going to be flawed simply because in the history of mankind, we have never followed a low-fat diet. We have never consumed these newfangled edible oils like corn oil, soybean oil, canola oil. All of these newfangled fats and oils are really to our detriment. They're not something that's supposed to be in our diets.
What's interesting is, the cost of obesity and the cost of being out of shape to, in the United States, it's estimated that the growing numbers of obesity and related healthcare expenses is something like $150 billion annually. That is a massive, massive bill because of how improperly we've been eating and looking after ourselves.
That's right. I call it the multi-trillion dollar lie, Tom. It's not just a billion-dollar lie. It's a trillion-dollar lie. Look at the grief and suffering that has come because of the fact that we have reduced our consumption of traditional foods in our diet, in particular the animal fats. And it's been a wrongful demonization campaign. And so now we look at 2, 3, 4 generations of children raised on this nutrient-deficient diet. And now they're saying that over 25% of our children have mental disorders. I mean, I don't know how they're going to be able to live a very productive life as an adult if they're starting off life malnourished and having all these mental problems. It's just, we have a disaster on our hands right now. And I'm not exaggerating. I don't think I'm exaggerating at all. I look around and I see how sick our children are, and it just breaks my heart. And so I know that the solutions are out there, but unfortunately we just haven't got mainstream medicine on our side as yet, and we haven't got the universities on our side as yet. So this initiative is going to help turn things around. There's no question about it.
One of the interesting things that's been developed over the last couple of years as well, to cloud the picture somewhat, although not totally say, well, you know, fat is okay, because is this theory of the obesity paradox, where a research, and this is, you know, across the fields, are looking at overweight people. For instance, in the case of diabetes, people who are overweight but had diabetes live twice as long as people who were of normal weight and had diabetes. And it's like, well, isn't that weird? And they're finding that obesity isn't necessarily the worst thing in the world. However, I mean, when you look at the research, nowhere do they say being obese is fine, but it'd be interesting to see why underweight, underweight people have a greater chance of dying. In 2007, I'll just give you this number. Mm-hmm. In 2007, a study of 11,000 Canadians over more than a decade found that those who were overweight had the lowest chance of dying from any cause. Wow.
That's right. So overweight people are healthier than people who are underweight.
Okay.
This amounts to a BMI of about 25, anywhere between 25 and 30. So, and depending on your height, of course, this is a generalization, but depending on your height, that could mean that you're overweight by 15 or 20 pounds. And that's not a bad thing. That's actually, now that we're looking at this research, you know, it's actually a good thing.
And you have been consistent, at least in saying that, in terms of, you know what, Tom, it's better to be 5, 10, 15, 20 pounds overweight than the other way.
That's right. I know we're not, by any stretch of the imagination, endorsing obesity. We're
right.
Just saying it's okay to have a few curves. And if you look at art throughout history, of course, you know, I lived in New York for a couple of years, so I visited a lot of art museums. And the art of history, when you look in particular women, when you look at them, they're very curvy. And this is what men found attractive. This is what they perceived to be healthy. Curvy women were more fertile, and so on and so forth. So when I see very skinny or thin women, it's a red flag for me, because I wonder how they're doing hormonally, because you always see these skinny and thin women, and they tend to have a lot of hormonal problems.
Hmm. Interesting. Now, we got to take a break in the program, but when we come back, let's talk about sleep. Let's talk about, because sleep is one of those things, there's a great series this week in the National Post, and talking about, we still really don't understand fully the mechanics and what happens when we go to sleep, but except we understand you need decent sleep to fully restore the body and to balance the body out. All the problems from lack of sleep get turned around when you have good sleep. So when we come back, can we talk about sleep and how to get a good sleep?
Oh, I'd love to. It's one of my favorite subjects.
All right. Pam Colleen, nutritional consultant and also sleep consultant, going to join us on the program for another segment talking about getting a good night's rest and what it can do for the body and what it can do also for the brain as well. 16 minutes after 11 o'clock. I'm Tom McConnell. This is News Talk 610 CKTV. 20 minutes after 11 o'clock. Pam Colleen, nutritional consultant, joining us on the program. And Pam, when you consult with your clients, how often is sleep detrimental in their living a healthy life?
Well, it's that they can't sleep. It's not that they're choosing not to sleep. What's happening with the vast majority of my clients, about 95% of the people who start working with me on my program have some sort of sleep disorder. Either they can't fall asleep at night, or that if they do fall asleep, they
can't stay asleep.
They can't stay asleep, or they wake up feeling very unrefreshed, like they haven't slept at all. So I have to deal with all of these issues, especially in the initial phases of my program, simply because getting them to be able to have a good night's sleep is pivotal in terms of their recovery. And most of the people I'm working with, of course, have things like, you know, chronic fatigue, depression, anxiety, OCD, all sorts of mental and psychological issues. So it's very, very important for them to sleep. And I think, you know, I know that there's been a lot of information in the media lately about sleep, but I think they're really, their eye is off the target. They really don't understand what's really crucial that's going on here. And that has to do with blood sugar control. It has to do with the adrenal glands, and it has to do with the body burden in terms of heavy metals. And it's these things that actually influence whether or not somebody's going to have a good night's sleep. So primary to having a good night's sleep is to have really good blood sugar control. And to do that, you must be eating enough animal fat in your diet throughout the day. And that amount amounts to eating 3 square meals in order to regulate blood sugar, in order to fuel the nervous system properly. And so if somebody is dysregulating their blood sugar levels, that actually creates stress on the adrenal gland. And over time, because of this stress, the adrenal glands start to wear down. So you get something called adrenal burnout or adrenal insufficiency. And when that happens, then the body is in this fight-or-flight mode all the time because it's in an alarm state all the time. And so the body internally is saying that you're running away from a lion. Mm-hmm. And if you're running away from a lion, of course, there's no time for sleep, eating, or sex. So all these systems become awry if you're not regulating your blood sugar and not stabilizing your nervous system in general. So this is one thing that's being overlooked. And so what I have to do with everybody is I have to get them to eat more animal fat in their diet. Salt is also a really wonderful thing for relaxing the adrenal glands and getting them out of this sort of, you know, stress state. So I use salt and I use animal fat as part of the protocol in order to help relax the nervous system.
Let me ask you, before a lot of people go to bed, so you, I know, have stressed 3 square meals, heavy on the animal fat, but not solely on the animal fat. But then a lot of people, is it a mistake to snack before you go to bed? And what would be the wrong thing to eat? Let's say it's 8:30 at night. I'm just winding down. What would be the wrong thing to eat for a good night's sleep? What would be the right thing to eat?
Well, the right thing to eat would be something like sausage or high-fat cheese or leftover meat from dinner, something that's high in animal fat in order to help regulate your blood sugar so that it doesn't dip at 3 o'clock in the morning, then put you into this alarm state so you wake up prematurely. So you want to eat something that's high in animal fat. And that, you know, if you're eating too many carbs, especially simple carbs before you go to bed, like
a bowl of cereal,
crackers and cake and all of these foods, then it's going to only put you into a blood sugar roller coaster ride over the course of the night. And that's what's going to dysregulate your sleep. So it's, you know, eating, if you had a high-fat yogurt before you went to bed and threw a few berries in it, that's not what I'm talking about. It's these simple carbohydrates that don't have the right kind of animal fat in there in the first place.
So
that's what's going to cause problems.
So something along the lines, and I'm sure a lot of people do this, not thinking about, well, because it's sleep, because we never think about what our body is doing when we process foods when we're asleep. We think about during the day, oh, I need this to be alert, or I need this for energy, but at night, we don't think about what our body's doing. So a lot of people would consume a bowl of cereal maybe before bed, and that sounds like it's the wrong thing to eat. Totally.
Right. Well, I mean, the thing that they're craving at night is they're craving the carbohydrates,
right,
to push up the serotonin, the neurotransmitter, which converts to melatonin, which helps you fall asleep. So they're craving the sugar for that transaction to occur in the brain, so to speak. And that, you know, might make them feel good for a little while. It might help them fall asleep initially, but it's not going to help keep them asleep and give them a good quality sleep over the course of the night, because they haven't, by doing that, they haven't regulated their blood sugar and stabilized their nervous system.
So what else do you recommend for people who are having, first of all, let's see, trouble falling asleep? What's the couple of recommendations quickly for them if they're going to make sure you eat properly before you go to bed? Obviously, no caffeine. That's just going to keep you up. That's a limit. But what else can you do? What simple things can you do? What adjustments can you make?
Well, salt is a natural hypnotic, so it can help people fall asleep at night. So I tell people to take a little bit of salt before they go to bed at night. And if they wake up prematurely, to take a little bit extra salt. If that doesn't seem to work, you might have to add in a very simple, not complicated, don't get too many ingredients in your calcium magnesium supplement. All you want to do is get a very basic calcium and magnesium supplement. It's got to be a 2-to-1 ratio, calcium to magnesium. Don't just take straight calcium and don't just take straight magnesium. That's not a good idea. You want to get a 2-to-1 ratio, calcium to magnesium, and take that before you go to bed at night. Now, some people may need 1 capsule, 2 capsules, even 3 capsules. If you start taking more than that, unfortunately, you'll probably find in the morning you're running to the toilet a lot because of all the magnesium in it. Some people do, and it's necessary for some people to take even more than that. But certainly 1, 2, or possibly 3 before you go to bed is enough to help some people relax.
Now, I have a question from Michelle, who says, my husband cannot eat meat past 6 p.m. without waking up throughout the night. He calls it the steak sweats. I can't imagine letting him have meat as a bedtime snack. What's happening to him then? How does he counter this?
Well, it's a complicated subject because I'd have to ask him more questions about his digestion and so on.
Okay.
But with red meat, what happens is, because red meat is one of our best sources of zinc in terms of our everyday diet, when you eat red meat, and it's high in zinc, of course, the zinc starts to push out the extra copper. And when the copper is coming out, it can make people feel very, very sick, very uncomfortable. You know, night sweats I haven't heard about, but certainly very commonly I'll hear about nausea and headaches when people eat red meat. So, yes, people can react to eating red meat. It doesn't mean that there's something wrong with the red meat. It means that there's something wrong with somebody's biochemistry, and they have to, you know, somehow regulate their mineral balance so that they can eventually handle the red meat more effectively.
Interesting. Now, what about people who are waking up in the middle of the night and then can't go back to sleep? Another problem.
That's the same thing. They're going to have to take a little bit of extra salt before they can fall back asleep again. Usually that helps. And again, more calcium, magnesium, maybe one or two more tablets before they can fall back asleep again. If the problem is persistent, if these things don't seem to help, of course, doing a hot tub before they go to bed, a sauna before they go to bed, all of these other things will help them relax. They also have to do more aggressive routines, like during the course of the day, they have to train their adrenal glands to relax, to stop producing so many stress hormones. So they have to maybe potentially look at, you know, sitting down and relaxing, reading a book, meditating, whatever helps them relax over the course of the day, because it does take some training to relax those adrenal glands so that by the time you go to bed at night, you can put yourself into a state of relaxation and better fall asleep. Now, if these strategies we're talking about, Tom, don't help at all, I work with biochemistry, and it becomes very complicated for me to explain the underlying issues that are actually causing the sleep disorders, but it can take a lot of work to resolve this issue. So if what we're talking about today doesn't seem to help, then you're going to have to dig much deeper, because heavy metals are going to be an issue, because these heavy metals are constantly stressing the adrenal glands, you see, so they're constantly keeping the adrenals in this alarm state. And that too will, you know, keep people awake or prevent them from having a good night's sleep.
Pam, always a pleasure. We'll talk in a couple of weeks. For more information, of course, there's your website, pamkaleen.com, with all sorts of links and articles and books and seminars, everything you want to know, pamkaleen.com. Always a pleasure. Have a great week, Pam.
Thanks so much, Tom. Take care.